How's it going, gentlemen? This is Scott McKay from XMY Communications coming at you once again with another audio program. Today, hey, I've got a guy that you guys always appreciate when I bring him on. It's none other than my good friend from North Kakalaka, Brad Howard. What's up, man?
Hey, buddy. How are you doing?
Doing good. It's been, you know, that almost sounded like a pickup line.
It was, man.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Hey, buddy. What's up?
How you I got nice shoes, you? Too. Anyway, man, obviously you and I go way back.
Sure.
And one of the things we've never talked about, and I've actually had guys hit me up with a couple emails on this lately, so I figure it would be a perfect conversation to have with my Power Sessions guys here, would be, let's say you want to improve how good you look physically. Because, you know, Brad, these guys know already, you've got the Adonis Effect program, which is still pretty much the premier resource for becoming a guy who's not just in better shape and feeling better, but looking better exactly in the way that most attracts women. We know that looks doesn't matter as much to women. You can get past it, but man, there's just a great confidence boost and a great health boost from being in peak physical condition. The problem is that so many of us out there, Brad, we look in the mirror and, you know, I say we, I've done what you suggest. I've come a long way. I've probably got another 10 pounds to go, but I've dropped about 35 or 40 now.
Nice.
And, but you know, when you first look in the mirror and you see a long road ahead, your first impulse is just, man, why even bother? This is going to take so long and the possibility of failure is so great. It just seems like a low percentage chance that I'm ever going to get anywhere. And what you end up doing is nothing. You don't get off of top dead center and you just stay the way you are because the perceived value of putting in all that work and all that time vis-a-vis, you know, maybe losing 10 pounds or 15 pounds for your efforts just seems really daunting. I mean, to quote the great Charles Barkley, right? Losing weight is hard. Right,
it
that's what
hard.
He said, right? And it is, hard. So yeah. I figured you're an expert. How do you get us off ground zero and get us doing something that's going to make us feel good and make us feel motivated about actually losing the weight, building up the muscle, and getting closer to our Adonis index? I guess basically what I'm asking, Brad, is where do we start?
The very first thing you want to do is kind of get an idea of where you are right now. And if you're familiar with our stuff and kind of what it is, I'll give you a really, really quick background. Your Adonis index basically is your shoulder to waist ratio. Throughout all the research, we found there's a certain shoulder to waist ratio, which just happens to match up with the golden ratio. And you can Google that if you want to. I know you got a lot of engineers and guys that are really mathematically inclined that would enjoy that. But your shoulder to waist ratio is the heavily factored part of this, the whole attraction equation across all nationalities and things like that. But beyond that, comes in the question, and I know a lot of guys are kind of a little wishy-washy thinking about, you know, I'm trying to get in shape because I want to, you know, impress women or something like that. So if we take that aside for a second, let's talk about something else that makes people a little more comfortable. And that's the fact that is a good looking body a healthy body and vice versa. And so the first thing you want to do is, and the answer is yes. And so obviously we're going to keep this call short. There's some podcasts and stuff on our site that Scott will give you a link to later on that you can check out if you want to for free. But the big thing is that you want to find out where you are, and you're going to use your Adonis index or your shoulder waist ratio as more or less a convergence point. So it helps to whittle you down and help keep you on track because you know now you have a goal that you're working towards, and that's kind of the big thing that a lot of people don't have in this realm. So like you were saying earlier, it's like, I think I need to lose about 10 more pounds. Or, you know, I need to gain some muscle. But that, in actuality, it's not very specific for a lot of people. And so you kind of get lost. And you run into something that we call goal hijacking, where you start out wanting one thing. Let's say you just want to look better. And then you get on Google and you start looking around, trying to find information. And the next thing you know, you get into powerlifting or you get into CrossFit or you get into, you know, things that have a culture around them. And then you get sucked into the culture instead of actually and pulled away from actually what you were trying to do, which was just look better or be healthier or whatever that goal is. But it happens a lot in the in this particular industry. So the big thing is that you got to know, number one, where you're starting, and you got to know what your goal is. And it doesn't have to be to get a perfect Adonis index. It could be anything. If it's the fact that, you know, you have some sort of athletic things that are coming across that that you want to get better at, or you're getting, you're an athlete and you get paid to do that, that's kind of the way I look at it. If you get paid to do to be an athlete, then you should probably do athletic training. If you don't get paid to do athletic training, you should probably do looks-based training. That's just my opinion. But that's the starting point is, again, knowing where you are and where you want to go, and being specific about that first and foremost.
Yeah, I think that's all great advice. You know, a lot of guys say, I want to attract women, therefore I want to become a powerlifter. But women aren't attracted to powerlifters. Or, man, I just want to lose weight because I'm too fat to get women. I think sure. Having a lot more targeted a goal, just like you're talking about, really does help guys stay focused. I'm 100% in agreement with you. So what do I do first, Brad? Today I wake up and decide I'm going to finally, after 2 years of just eating Cheetos and drinking milkshakes from McDonald's and not doing anything but sitting around being a couch potato, I'm going to do something. What do I do? What do I do with my refrigerator? What do I do with my shopping list? What do I do with my gym membership? What do I do with my hobbies? Where do I start?
Well, the first thing is that you've got to understand that all of this, making any of this, any type of change, whether it's muscle building or fat loss, and I'm going to skew more towards fat loss just because muscle building, as far as a process, is much easier to go through. It's not as grueling. Fat loss for most people, it's hard, and it's probably arguably the hardest thing you ever do. And I say that, and I'm not saying that to discourage people. The reason I'm saying that is because once you can understand that and then get a grip around that of how tough it is, it makes your decisions a lot easier because you realize that this stuff, it really isn't your fault. I mean, if your willpower fails you, then there's a reason for that. It's because it's tough. So you talked about grocery lists and things like that. The big thing is, and again, talking more towards fat loss, is that you want to determine what your trigger foods are, and you want to not have those in the house. I mean, it seems to make sense when you think about it in principle, but a lot of people don't do that. What a lot of people will do is, you know, let's say peanut butter is a big trigger food for a lot of people, men and women. So let's say that, you know, you have peanut butter in the house. Well, at any given moment, you can go get it and dig into it. And a lot of people, once they hit the first spoonful, it's a done deal. The whole jar is gone. And so one of the biggest, I guess, techniques, and it's not even a technique, but it's just more common sense, is that you shouldn't let willpower dictate your whatever process you're trying to do. So you have to remove any type of willpower out of the equation. So like an example would be if you're a recovering alcoholic, you don't go to bars. I mean, that just makes sense, right? It just makes good sense. No matter if you're going to, if you're meeting some friends out and you promise you're not going to drink, and if you've got that type of a pull on you for something, well, then you just don't do it, right? Same thing like when you're a kid and your parents don't let you hang out with certain people because they're bad influence. You know, so you want to remove willpower from the situation and try to set up certain routines that are going to help you out. Now, the other thing is that you need to simplify a lot. Weight loss is, no matter what anybody says, weight loss is all about restriction. You're either going to restrict calories, specific foods, or both. In reality, calories are all you need to worry about. And I know you've probably heard from a lot of different people that calories don't matter, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's crap. It's really no matter what the science that you can dig up around it, it's still the best model you have. And yes, I have seen people drop weight by just restricting certain food groups or certain foods and things like that, and that works for a while. But the fact is that usually only takes people back to average. What an average, and when I say average, I'm going to say average is probably a shoulder to waist ratio of about 50%. So if you're 6 foot, then a waist of 36 is probably about average. So these types of strategies will take you to average. But if you want to get lean, then calories come into play. It's the only way. Almost every person I've ever met, even competitive bodybuilders, people on tons of drugs, they all, when they're getting down to single-digit body fats, calories matter. And so getting a handle on that is really important. So you're going to – the big thing is you're going to use diet to control your waist. So what goes in your mouth controls your waist. Don't worry about doing any type of crazy cardio. You can if you like it. It's not a necessity. And the reason I say that is because it doesn't do as much burning as a lot of people think. Here's one thing a lot of people don't know is that let's say you're on a machine, a piece of cardio in the gym. Let's say it's a treadmill. And you set the machine up and you're running or walking or doing whatever you're doing. And you look down after an hour and it says you burned 500 calories. Well, did you really burn 500 calories? Well, the answer is no. You burned 500 calories total, but it's not 500 extra on top of what you would have burned anyway. That's not what it is. The problem is, let's say it was an hour that you were working out. Well, you were still going to burn 200 calories during that hour anyway, just by being there, whether you walked or not. If you just sat there, you'd have burned 200 calories. So in reality, all you burned was an extra 300 calories. And so the biggest thing is there's a lot of errors that come into this, and that's why a lot of people fail, because of the math. They don't really understand where the errors in calorie counting are. For instance, we just discussed doing cardio or any type of weight training and adding on and thinking that you burned a certain amount of calories when in essence you really only burned 60% of that number because you were extra. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it actually makes sense. Perfect sense.
Okay. All I was going to say is there's kind of two sides of that. There's estimating the calories you burn in a day, and there's estimating the calories that you consume in a day. And there's errors on each side of this. There's inherent errors in just the measurement of protein, carbs, and fats. Like the standard, just to give you a number, the standard amount of calories in a gram of protein is 4 grams. But the fact is that different proteins, that number is actually different. It's just an average, and it depends on how you cook it. So bioavailable it is. So if you cook something well done, you're going to get more of it. You're going to be able to digest more of it. Whereas if you cook something that's more rare, it's not going to get as much of it is not going to get digested. So you have those type of errors that people are trying to account for, but you know it just messes up. You got numbers people trying to make the argument that protein, just the consumption of protein, actually has a metabolic effect and actually burns calories because you have to digest it. It does, but it's really not that big of a deal. It's really not that big of a spike. It's really not even worth thinking about. Even reading labels and things like that, there are rounding errors. John Barbin, one of my partners and the creator of the Adonis Index, he actually went into a grocery store with a scale, and he measured out protein bars. And each of these protein bars was supposed to be 90 grams, is how much they were supposed to weigh or in mass. And some of them weighed 100 grams. Some of them weighed 115. One of them weighed 130 grams. But you're basing all of your, what you're eating on the number that's on the wrapper. And that error is huge.
Wow.
That was like a 30% error.
Yeah.
So not only that, but another thing that people don't take into consideration, because we don't – at the beginning, until you get really lean, we don't take exercise into account at all as far as calorie burn because of all these errors. Another reason we don't is because there are a lot of compensatory effects that happen that, for instance, everybody's done this. Everybody's had like 2 or 3 cups of coffee and you've been jamming, and then later on in the day you just drag down, right? Mm-hmm. You just crash. Well, the same thing happens with exercise. I mean, you can go out and you can work your ass off and do all this interval training and stuff like that. And yes, you spike up the amount of calories you burn during that 2-hour window or however long you worked out. But then at some point in the rest of the day, because you're tired, maybe you sleep for an extra hour, or maybe you take a nap. Maybe you're just not as, up, get up and go, right? So that compensatory effect actually takes away from what you had burned earlier. So a lot of times it might just end up being a wash, if that makes sense. Now, that's a tough concept for people to understand, is the compensatory effects, but it happens a lot. And so it's not an easy, I'm stacking this on top of this on top of this, like this big additive thing. It's more or less, I mean, if you're, as bad as I hate to say it, not to get too nerdy, but it's more like a system of partial differential equations where everything depends on everything and everything is working in unison, trying to stay at some sort of equilibrium. And so that's why we say until you're trying to get into single digits of body fat, all you got to do is watch what you put in your mouth. And eat. And there are no such thing as good or bad foods. We've got people that have eaten all sorts of different ways. John, people look on the blog, he's absolutely shredded right now. And he has a coffee and some type of sweet bagel or something every morning, which, you know, if you listen to most people would be the devil. You know, he should be dead right now. There's no way he could get lean, but he is. And then one of the big strategies we use is called intermittent fasting as well. A lot of people are hearing about it now. It's starting to become mainstream. Another one of my partners, Brad Pelon, with Eat Stop Eat, that's been out for about 4 years. So he's kind of pioneering that as well. I'm trying to be quick.
Let's talk about some objective things. I mean, I think we got the background down.
Sure.
Here, let me just run some things by you in the interest of time. First of all, I don't know. We probably have all heard this, but just in case guys haven't, if you're drinking a bunch of sodas, start buying water instead. Get rid of the. I love your idea about getting rid of what's going to tempt you. Just taking willpower out of the equation. For what it's worth, that's hard to do if you've got skinny people living in your home with you.
It is.
Because they're going to bring pizzas and cake. You kind of have to like help them help you. You have to say, hey, look, if you could eat that outside the house, like if you could go to get fast food and get your pizza elsewhere instead of bringing home a 16-inch pizza, I would appreciate it. Because what that person's going to tell you is, well, just don't eat the pizza. It's like, no, you don't understand. You're bringing something I love into the house, and it smells great and looks great, and it's right there in front of me, and you're asking me to do the impossible. So, I mean, you have to kind of get in cahoots with the people you live with.
Well, here's a strategy that we've come up with. It's called Covert Nutrition. And where this came from was I got an email from Brad Pelon one day because he was getting a lot of questions. Because at the time, intermittent fasting, people were scared about their body going in starvation mode and their muscle just automatically falling off and their metabolism crashing, all of that stuff, which is complete crap. It doesn't happen until you're in single-digit body fat. So all the starvation mode, that type of stuff, I don't even concern yourself with it. But somebody wrote in saying, how do I explain this to people, what I'm doing, intermittent fasting? And they wanted to win the argument, right? And so he sends it over to me. And my reply back is, why is she even telling anybody? And so that's the key. The thing is that, and you understand this being an entrepreneur, there are only certain people that you can tell what you're doing because the rest of the people don't understand. They either have bad information or they think something's risky. In a way that because they have no information about it. And so what we do, and one of the strategies that we talk about, remember, meal timing is bunk. I mean, 6 meals a day, if it works for you, great. It's not necessary.
That's not what works for me. I have to not eat until at the end of the day. And then because I mean, if I eat breakfast and lunch, I'll still eat the same amount for dinner. So I might as well just eat dinner. And that's how I lose weight. And that's how my dad loses weight. I mean, I think you're right. You have to, first of all, figure out what works for you.
Yep, it's completely fine. I mean, and that's the big thing too. You get a lot of fat loss gurus out there that talk about how they do stuff and they have their methodology. But the fact is, that's only going to work for a small subset of people that have the exact same lifestyle constraints, which is really important. And I didn't talk about that earlier, but you have to understand what your lifestyle constraints are and what you're allowed to do and work your plan within that. You can't change your whole life around to try to work because that's just a recipe for disaster. And so the big strategy with that, so first you determine your lifestyle constraints. I mean, a person with kids, young kids, probably going to have a lot different constraints than somebody that's single, just the way it is. Yeah. Finances matter. These things matter. And every person is different. And so what works for one person exactly might not necessarily work for you because you just don't have the same lifestyle constraints. That's just the fact of nature. It doesn't mean you suck. It doesn't mean they suck. That's just the way it is. The other thing is that you go through the week and you determine the times that you're going to be social. So tonight NC State's going to play in the NCAA tournament, right? And they finally made it far enough. Good God, it's been 20 years or something. And so, yes, I'm going to go out and I'm probably going to have some drinks or whatever. But I already knew that was going to happen. And so I've already quote unquote budgeted for this for the week. So if you have a job in sales and you know that certain days you're going to be taking people out to lunch and you're required to eat and probably eat what they're eating because you're trying to mirror them and things like that, that's fine. You just zoom out and you think about things on a weekly basis instead of a daily basis. Mm. So you remove the acuteness of the situation and you move out to a weekly basis. So now you're judging your goal is a weekly calorie load and you dance in with that instead of going daily and worrying about it. You just work out weekly because all fat loss is how much you weigh is how much you've eaten over time. It's not like I ate carbs tonight and the next thing I'm fat. It doesn't work that way. It's the subtle and incremental adding of all of these things together. And it works the other way around as well. And so what we talk about when we talk about covert nutrition and scheduling things out on a weekly basis as far as eating calorie loads is you never want people to see you sweat. So if you're not going to be eating or if you're going to be skipping meals or trying to find ways to work your life in because you have certain meals that you just have to have. Like when I'm like Loretta and I would eat every night, right? So going back to your pizza analogy, like people bringing pizza in, she's slender. And so she can eat whatever she wants for the most part. She has a good, she's one of the rare birds that can just put down her fork when she's had enough and not finish the plate. Obviously I'm not like that. But I know that I'm going to eat with her every night. And so that being the case, and since I buy the food, I understand, I know what we're going to have and how many calories that's going to be, blah, blah, blah. And then all I do is just budget the rest of my meals and the rest of my food around those mandatory things that I've got going on. And so if that means some days that I'm only eating once a day, to make that happen, well, that's fine. That's part of an intermittent fasting protocol. It's not going to kill you.
I think a couple of other things I would throw in, at least they worked for me, and you can comment on these before we wrap this up.
Sure.
I think you get rid of the sodas. You stop drinking soda, even diet soda, and just buy water. I mean, it's cheap. And you know what? It's funny because when you get out of the habit of drinking water, you think water's boring and that you don't like it and it isn't going to hit the spot. It's one of those things where if you just will crack the water and drink the water, you realize it did hit the spot. But you have to rebuild that habit. And the more water I drink, the more weight falls off. Sure. Water just flushes you out, and it's great, great stuff. So the first thing I would do when I look in the mirror and go, I got to start doing something, getting back to the original point of this call, would be to drink more water. Now, as far as working out, I think a lot of people do see that as drudgery. I work out because I feel better when I work out, and when I work out and feel better, then all of a sudden I have more motivation and I want to stick to my goals. So that's just something that psychologically helps me. Plus it makes me feel better physically, which makes me want to go out and do more physical things. So it has that kind of domino effect, not only psychologically, but physically. But I've noticed that I sit around and I work on the computer a lot. That's just what we do. That's what you and I do. We're internet marketer, dating coach types, and that's what we do. But when Emily and I escape and we leave the country and we go exploring on vacation and we walk and walk and climb and do, we can eat like horses on those trips. And I come home and I've lost weight. So the lifestyle really is a huge part. I mean, if I am sitting around like a lump all day, I can eat a lot fewer calories and still be gaining weight than if I was active all day long. I mean, the great example I like to look at is these guys who work for UPS and FedEx and run around all day carrying packages and stuff. None of those guys are ever fat. They're always in great shape.
Sure.
They can't help it because they're not sitting in front of a computer all day. They're out doing things. So if you can get out from the computer and do something else other than sit in front of the computer, I would say do it. You know, yeah. If you can have this phone conversation with someone while walking around the block instead of while sitting in front of the computer with your legs up, go do it. That's what I'm doing on coaching calls lately, is I walk around the neighborhood if I'm not recording them.
Sure.
And it doesn't decrease the experience of the call for the other person. It just helps you walk while you're talking. And then I have more energy while I'm talking, and I think I even have more mental flexibility like that. Mm-hmm. And so those are the things I would start doing from ground zero. The other thing is pasta, man, and bread. If you can just stop eating pasta and bread, you know, usually those things are ancillary to what you really, really love anyway, although I'm a huge pasta lover. Just don't eat bread with your meal. Just eat, you know, if you want to make a sandwich, wrap it up like in lettuce or something and try something different. Change your diet up. I think a lot of times guys in particular eat the same stuff over and over and over again. And that's how we got fat. You know, crack a book, go searching on the internet, take your favorite stuff and look for new ways to cook it, new ways to prepare it. A lot of us who are single guys out there, are eating a lot of fast food. Guys, having fresh, good food at home doesn't involve you learning how to be a freaking world-class chef to pull it off. Some of it's easier, as easy as going out and buying the fast food. And I'll tell you, it's oftentimes easier and quicker than standing in line, too, if you know what you're doing. And again, there's lots of resources for that. If you're going to fat burger places all the time, try going to Subway. I mean, I know it sounds funny, but just go and get a sandwich with some vegetables on it. Major on the vegetables and, you know, go get a sandwich instead of getting a hamburger today and just see if you like it as much. Those are things you can try, because I think a lot of the eating habits, especially for guys, like I said, we just eat the same stuff over and over and over again. We have no creativity, and that's how we got here. So shake it up, just like you're saying. I think you've already kind of alluded to that. You know, Shake up your diet. Figure out some different stuff and just see what it is that's adding empty calories that you really won't miss. The other thing that I would add before we close is just learn how to have an alarm go off every time you eat anything. Because, man, you can go around the house or you can go around your workplace and, you know, all the secretaries have candy dishes and you're just popping a Reese's cup here and you're eating a cookie at the, you know, that's by the coffee setup at a seminar you went to. And the next thing you know, you've eaten 700 or 800 calories of stuff you didn't even realize you ate all day long.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Let this alarm go off every time you're about to pick up something and put it in your mouth. Go, hey, every little bit adds up. And you know what? Here's the weird part. You're not suffering. You're not more hungry. You're not less satisfied in terms of your dietary intake because you skipped all those little, you know, nickels and dimes because you skipped all those little snacks all day long. And by little snack, I mean that one Starlight Mint you're popping while just standing there talking to someone on a sales call. You know, take control over figuring out what it is you're eating. And, you know, it just won't hurt. It won't hurt at all. And you'll be doing nothing, literally, and helping yourself at the same time. Just that one little habit change. If you have any comments on those are the things I would throw out there.
Yeah, two quick things, and then we can close out. The first thing is kind of what you alluded to earlier. You were talking about what you were really talking about when you were talking about switching over to water, switching over, you know, dropping pastas and breads and things like that for a lot of people. For many people, and this isn't for everybody, like, you may not have to do that. Like we have one guy who's in China. There's no way he could drop rice and pasta. I mean, that's the staple dish, right? So he had to figure out something else. But most of these foods that you've alluded to are trigger foods. And most trigger foods have a combination, and they're engineered this way. Like the Snickers bar is a perfect food, arguably, because it has a perfect mix of sugar, salts, and fats. And I mean, think a Reese cup. I mean, you put Reese cups in front of me, they're done.
Exactly.
So The big thing is, and this is probably the most controversial statement I've ever made, but I've said it time and time again, and we've proven it to be true time and time again. How you lose the weight isn't as important as losing the weight. Barring like doing a bunch of coke or smoking 12 packs of cigarettes a day to make it happen, however you do it, as long as that weight's coming off, is fine. It is healthier than whatever you're doing now and being at that weight. And if you don't believe it, do it. Do whatever you want to do. You cannot eat for 2 weeks. You take your, go to the doctor, take your measurements, get all of your stuff done, your blood glucose, your cholesterol, all this stuff. I guarantee you when you go back to the doctor, those numbers will be improved because you've lost fat. It happens every time. And so quit getting so like just emphatically, I've got to do this a certain way because it's the quote unquote healthiest. And I hate the word healthy because it's one of those trigger words where people can say, if they say, oh, that's not healthy. It's kind of like saying that's a scam and it automatically throws you off. And so I don't like using that word because there's no definition for it other than what I just gave you. Are your measurable numbers better than they were? Well, if so, what you did was healthy. So that's a big thing with me. And you want to do it as fast as possible. Don't dilly-dally around the Band-Aid approach. Get it off. Your first goal is to get your height to waist below 50%. That's where that's what the research shows, all the metabolic stuff happens when you're above 50%. So like I say, if you're 6 foot, over 36 inches, you've got a much bigger risk of heart disease, diabetes, all that type of junk. And then the second point that you alluded to, talking about grabbing things, one of the biggest things that happens in diet studies and why a lot of diet studies aren't reliable is people are notorious for underreporting on their food. And so if you ever read a diet, like somebody ever shows you a diet study when they report how much people ate, especially the older ones, the biggest thing is a lot of people don't keep a lot of these people in metabolic wards and feed them food. A lot of the times in these studies, people were self-reporting what they ate, but people forget what they ate. I mean, you forget the Reese's cup you picked up. You forget this. And so there could be 500 calories in a day, each and every day, that you just totally forget about. And it happens. I've done it tons. Mm-hmm. And so again, kind of going back into the errors that we talked about earlier and why this is so difficult. So underreporting is a huge deal, and it's a proven fact that the heavier you are, the more you underreport what you eat.
That probably makes a lot of sense because you're eating more and therefore you're forgetting more.
Right.
Guys, I think the bottom line here is this, Brad. Don't wait till you go get a checkup at the doctor's office and get scared into doing this.
Yeah,
because that will get you top dead center. I mean, when you get the glucose report and your doctor says, you know, congratulations, you're diabetic unless you lose 20, 30 pounds, that'll get you going. I mean, if you're 45 years old, guys, you want a wake-up call, man up and go get what's called a calcium test done on your heart. It's a quick MRI. It's about $75. Insurance doesn't cover it, but they know that, so they charge about $75 or $100 to do it. And just see where you are relative to other guys your age. And, you know, that's how you'll know how you're doing. I mean, how close to heart disease are you? How are you doing compared to guys your age? And I just had one done, and I was right there in the middle. You know, I was right there average. And my doctor said, well, you know, if you keep doing what you do for the rest of your life, you'll live an average life and you'll live an average lifespan. I go, but I'm young enough now where if I make changes, then, you know, I could basically correct, you know, the first 45 years of my life being average. He goes, that's absolutely true. You know, if you go back 10 years from now and you're way below average, then what you've done is you've given yourself a great start. And he goes, you know, guys, 45, well, you've given yourself a great change of course right there when you most needed it. And what guys don't realize is when you hit age 40, 45, you know, your heart hasn't really calcified a whole lot yet. And by calcification, I mean plaque in normal language, you know, what causes heart disease. You know, you're going to be able to see where you're going, but, you know, not a whole lot of the damage has probably been done yet.
Sure.
So by that time, you see where you're going, and you really can make the change, make the correction, and go forth for the rest of your life and get big results. And that's why he says guys 40, 45 should go do that, because you'll get some kind of reading.
Sure.
But it's still early enough where you can change it. So, I mean, I would recommend that to guys, because it isn't that scary. It just kind of gives you a reading. But definitely don't wait till you go to the doctor and all of a sudden you're diabetic, or you have heart disease, or you're developing health problems, or you've drank so much that your liver is already starting to fail on you. Don't let that happen. Don't wait for the doctor to scare you.
Yeah.
Motivate yourself now.
And the biggest reason for that is because once you get a scare like that, you're much more susceptible to scammy type stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, Now you've got diabetes, and I mean, there's so many things about how to cure diabetes online that are complete fraud, things that, you know, you're going to spend money on. And so the easy, again, get it off as fast as possible. And I'm going to say this really quickly, because I know you're going to say this. If you guys have any questions about any of this stuff we're talking about, or Muscle Builder, any of this stuff, Scott's going to give you a link in just a second that there's a, you can go pick up the main book of ours. It's really inexpensive. It's right now it's priced at like $10. But with that, and it tells you about the Adonis Index, where it came from, all the research behind it. Really, really fascinating, and the story behind it. Really fascinating. It's a really quick read, but it's good. But the big thing is it comes with, all of our clients get access to our community, where you can ask anything you want. And it's probably one of the most dynamic communities out there. And you know, we've got tons of expert doctors, plastic surgeons, different, all sorts of different guys in there, ready, willing, and able to help you out. And guys that have already been there. We've got three or four guys who've lost well over 100 pounds in less than 8 months. So, yeah, it's crazy. And so, but that's a resource. That's probably our most valuable resource. We practically give away for free to all of our customers. So,
awesome. Awesome. Yeah, the link there is www.scottrecommends.com/Brad Howard. And Scott has one T in it, and Brad Howard is BRADHOWARD. The Adonis Effects, Brad Howard. Thanks, as always, buddy, for coming and giving us just a wealth of information.
Oh, man, appreciate it, man. Always a good time.
And this is Scott McKay. Till I talk to you guys again real soon, be good out there.